The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Fred Brack from the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached by calling 919-781-1973. And I am recording this right after getting over a little bit of upper respiratory infection, so pardon me if there's a bit of going on or microphone cuts out while I cough or take a sip. We are opening the cover on the February 2018 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. This issue is entitled The Aviation Issue. The headline is Flying the Carolina Skies, Seven Spots for Soaring High, Lift Off to Lunch, Museums, and More. And there's a red bi-wing airplane here, shot from the tail end, sitting on a field somewhere in North Carolina, ready to take off. And maybe we'll be reading about it, certainly about some others. Maybe not today. We're going to cover the, this photo essay is actually about airlines, airplanes. So we will be talking about them a little bit, but the actual articles on them we'll get to next week. We are going to begin, as we always do, by reading the Welcome to Our State by Elizabeth Hudson, Editor-in-Chief. Love Everlasting. 14 children were in my first grade class, but only 5 different messages came in the box of assorted Valentines my mom bought for me to give out to my classmates. So, some messages had to repeat. You have my heart. Be mine. Somebody loves you. And I had to really think about who got which message before I printed their name on the 2-line. Now take your time with it, my mom told me. Think about what it says. She's a card person. She and my dad never gave each other Valentine gifts. No roses or jewelry, but they always exchanged cards, and to them the message mattered. In the early years of their marriage, my parents agreed to let the verse in the card reflect the year they'd been through. They searched hard for the right lines printed within. I remember standing with my mom at the drugstore while she read through card after card. Some years the message was about struggles and perseverance, sometimes hardship and support. Later, after 20 years of marriage, after 30 years of marriage, after 40 years of marriage, the verses acknowledged the passage of time. The messages spoke of patience and gratitude, and all was love. I'd pretend not to notice the private moment between my mom and dad at the kitchen table on Valentine's Day, when they'd sit beside each other with their coffee and open their cards and lean into each other, his hand on her knee. In 1995, my dad had open-heart surgery, a 10-inch-long incision down the middle of his chest. It took a long time for him to recuperate. While he was out of work, my mother doubled her hours, working 12-hour shifts, and then she'd come home and take care of him. When my dad started to heal, he took on the household chores, cooking meals, going to the grocery store. That Valentine's Day, along with his card, my dad gave my mother a gift for the first time after so many years, an African violet with velvety leaves, overflowing with pink, soft blooms. It was a 3-inch green plastic pot. I could just see him, my mom says now, laughing at the thought of my dad walking into Food Lion and spotting the display of plants and putting one in the buggy, breaking their long-standing rule. It had been a difficult year. Valentine's Day called for something that he believed reflected not just their year, but also their life. Something hardy and adaptable. A reminder that the things you care for always endure. Aunt Violet now sits near the east-facing window in Mom's townhouse. She's repotted it 4 times. She keeps the soil moist and prunes away the older leaves. And maybe this sounds odd, but she talks to it, too. Little messages that matter. And I swear, that violet, after 22 years, has 2 dozen blooms on it. So whatever it is she's saying, you have my heart. Be mine. Somebody loves you. Sure must be working. And now, as I always do, on the first reading of the month, I would like to interpret the pictorial for those of you who cannot enjoy the pictures or cannot enjoy them in full on your own. Let me assist. Up in the air. Our major airports can get us where we need to go. But away from the mad rush of takeoffs and landings, small airfields and aviation museums celebrate the wonder of flight, giving North Carolinians who long to defy gravity a gateway to the sky. This is a predominantly light blue photograph because it's mostly sky. And guess what's up in the sky? An airplane with a single propeller in the front of it. Mountains in the background, a few clouds down low, some hilltops with some green in the foreground and the washed out bluish gray in the back. Jackson County Airport perches on Berry Ridge at an elevation of more than 2,800 feet, offering views of both small aircraft and the mountains around Silva. Overleaf, this is clearly a hangar. Stories from the sky. Hendersonville. In 1989, believing that the first-in-flight state deserved a showcase for its airborne heritage, 3 members of the aviation community in western North Carolina decided to build a hangar to house those stories, with a special emphasis on their corner of the state. Nearly 30 years later, that original mission is still flying high. To walk under and around the colorful aircraft on display is impressive, but it's only part of the experience. Each plane has its own story to tell, and the docents who staff the museum are eager to share. It's got a long web address, but fairly easy to remember. Western North Carolina Air Museum.com. Wow. So here's the aircraft hangar. It's in good shape. Oh, it's probably about 2.5 stories high, a small peak at the center. It says WNC Air Museum. Maybe they should have thought of that for their web address. Anyway, there's a paved path going up to the front of it, and there's a couple of airplanes, single prop jobs out on the tarmac in front, and inside we see a very large, a relatively large, I should say, aircraft, single propeller, very yellow wings. There are 3 more planes that we can see that are hung from the rafters. No, 4 of them I actually see in there. And maybe that's a 5th one in the background. Some blue sky on top of the museum, wispy white clouds. Overleaf, women with wings. When Corby Bullock thinks about flying in Sanford, she feels extraordinarily lucky. The world looks a lot different from up there, she says. You don't see all those borders. Today, she's the first and only female executive pilot for the state of North Carolina. She began her career as a teacher with Wake County Schools. But after getting her first taste of flying in 1987, she was hooked. That's a bond she shares with other members of the 99s, an international organization of women pilots, of which Bullock is vice president. One project of the 99s, almost since the group's founding in 1929, is painting air markings at local airports, including compass roses, designs that help pilots calibrate the compasses on their planes. Recently, the Kitty Hawk 99s, one of North Carolina's chapters, painted a compass rose at Raleigh Executive Jetport. That's where Bullock keeps her Piper Dakota, the plane that she flies for the sheer love of flight. You can read about them at Kitty Hawk 99s, that's 99s.com. So here's that colorful, a compass rose is what you call it. It's light blue and white. We're looking north, so we see a white circle, and outside of it is the letter N. And inside the circle, coming toward the center, are two triangular shapes, one blue on the right, one white on the left with a little black strip in between. It meets a big circle of multiple concentric circles with some lettering in the center of it. I'm not quite sure what it is that I'm supposed to see. It looks like it's shot at an angle, so it's hard to see, but it looks like a 9, at least from this direction. And then extending down toward us, where there's a great big S in the lower right, are those long triangular shapes again, and where it was blue on one side on the top and white on the other, the colors are reversed. And here is the lady that we spoke about, Ms. Bullock. She's standing by her plane, smile on her face, checked shirt, ready to get in and take off. Lunch on the Fly. Carthage. There's a good reason to visit Gilliam McConnell Airfield, even if you don't arrive by plane. At the end of the runway, past Junkyard Dog, a replica World War II fighter plane with a fearsome scowl, you'll find tender, flavorful pork, cooked over hickory coals and pulled by hand. Gilliam McConnell and the barbecue restaurant next to it, Pick and Pig, share a special relationship. Whether diners stop by or in an airplane or an automobile, every meal comes with two front row seats to watch takeoffs and landings. Flying pigs may be an impossible idea, but this little airport proves that flying for pig is not only doable, it's delicious. Pick-n-pig.com. We see the building in the background. It's a pretty good-sized building. Been around a long time based on the color of that wood. And the words Pick and Pig are written in red on the front. And we're looking across the front of a single-engine plane, which is sort of an olive green, not particularly attractive, but the very front of it, where the propeller is all red, and beneath that are a set of shark's teeth. And overleaf from this, we find the home of the $100 hamburger, Rutherfordton. For general aviation pilots, a $100 hamburger isn't so much a menu item as it is a symbol of flying just for fun, a winking reference to the cost of fuel for a short round trip to a fly-in restaurant. At the Rutherford County Airport, 57 Alpha Calfe proudly touts its $100 hamburger. And although nothing on the menu will actually cause sticker shock, owner Ron McKinney carefully crafts each burger, plus Southwestern specialties like burritos and enchiladas, like it's worth a fortune. 57alpha.com is the name of the website, and in the back, across the wing of a white single-engine plane, no, this is a two-engine plane, it says Rutherford County Airport on the hangar. On the left is a picture of that pseudo $100 hamburger. It is looking delicious. There's some lettuce, and then there's a slab of tomato, artfully a little bit, it's had a little water sprayed on the edge, I suppose, for artistic purposes, or maybe it just actually came out a little wet, and the thin slice had it, the water, but it just looks really good in the photograph. And then we find a hamburger just smothered in multicolored cheese, a pickle on the side. Ready for takeoff. Morganton, growing up in Lenoir, Craig Pearson used to watch hang gliders launch off of Hyberton Mountain and soar through the air, and he dreamed of doing the same. After taking lessons with Kitty Hawk Kites on the Outer Banks, he wanted to share his passion for gliding with other people. For the next two decades, he and his wife Laura worked on making that vision a reality. In 2013, their company, Thermal Valley, named for the currents of the warm air that carry gliders higher, began taking members of the public into the sky. Today, Craig and Laura's kids, Liam and Lily, help out on the ground, for now. Just like their dad, they'd love to be up in the air. ThermalValley.net. So these... Well, what we see here is an actual glider, that is, one with an engine up in the front, pulling somebody in a glider, two people actually, hanging from the glider kind of by their, they're suspended, you know, with a belt, and then they hold forward with their hands onto a triangular contraption, which actually looks like it has wheels in the bottom for landing. So I guess they take you up using the powered glider, and then they cut the cable, and away you go. Bird's eye view, Morganton. The Thermal Valley flights take off from Foothills Regional Airport, a location that offers a spectacular, peaceful view of nearby Grandfather and Table Rock Mountains. Craig lives for the glider eyes, Laura says, referring to the new perspective that hang gliding imparts. People are still floating when they come down. Up here at 1,500 to 2,000 feet above the earth, customers, including one who glided to celebrate her 81st birthday, fall in love not only with the thrill, but also with the calm and the quiet. And what we see here is a shot of the ground, which is the airport with one long runway. And all around the airport is forest, but where the camera is up above the glider, and we see one somewhat dirty tire in the front right and some struts sticking out and a hand on the right-hand side holding onto that little crossbar. And that's all we see here. The person may be using a head cam, or they lifted up their left hand and took a picture with a camera or something. And now history in the hangars is our last photo. In Asheboro, at the North Carolina Aviation Museum and Hall of Fame, two large hangars hold tales of bravery in the sky. Through planes, uniforms, and artifacts like goggles and gauges, many of them paired with the personal histories of the veterans who used them, the museum explores the role that aviation has played in our military history from World War I to the present. Another long name. NC Aviation Museum Hall of Fame.com. And that about does our pictorial, but we have another 9 minutes or so that we can read. So, because the next article is about Piedmont Airlines, and it's actually exactly 9 minutes. But as a sidebar, I'm going to hold off on that article and skip forward a little bit here and try one that's a little bit shorter so we have a better chance of finishing it. This is called Written on the Wind. When it comes to the banners that flutter through the sky above Outer Banks beaches. The words vary and the messages change, but the planes have been a constant for generations. Despite having just the name for it, Jenny Hawk didn't know how to fly. But the 20-year-old waitress was fascinated by those little airplanes that buzzed through the skies over the Outer Banks, towing ads for happy hours and discount dinner buffets, looking for a hobby to take up between shifts at the rundown cafe in Kitty Hawk and Miller's Waterfront in Nag's Head. She decided to spread her wings. My first lesson was a beautiful flight to Ocracoke along the coast, she says. She was hooked and asked the instructor what she needed to do to become a commercially rated pilot. That was in 2008. 3 years and hundreds of flight hours later, Jenny earned her commercial license and started offering flight training under the name OBX Airplanes in Manteo, a company that now specializes in just the sort of planes that once piqued your fascination. In 2012, she bought her first plane, a Cessna 150. In 2014, she bought her second, a Citabria, her plane of choice for towing banners. She picked it up in Colorado Springs and flew it back across the country, cruising at a clip of 230 miles per hour across the heartland. I had a tailwind the whole time, she says. It was amazing. The tailwind gods don't owe me a dime after that. Jenny is toggling between two hangars at Adair County Regional Airport. In one, her ground crew is assembling the day's advertising banners, clipping together black nylon letters the size of Jenny herself. In the other, she's grilling chicken breasts and pineapple spears. It's 9:30 in the morning, and this is breakfast. She's already driven up from New Bern, where she lives with her husband, also a pilot. The air is still, and despite the shade, it's already as hot as a storage shed in summer. A piece of pineapple falls on the ground. Normally, one of the dogs would have gotten that, she says. There's Birdie, a Weimaraner, and a lab named Rudder, the unofficial mascots of OBX airplanes. Small and lean like a yoga instructor, Jenny is as energetic as she is efficient. On this day, she's also issuing orders to the pilots and ground crew, double-checking schedules and charts, and preparing her plane for a long day's work. Her brother, Jesse Hawk, who is running the ground crew, says multitasking is nothing new for his sister. Even in high school in Manteo, Jenny kept two or three jobs going, a continuation of a family work ethic learned on the Pennsylvania dairy farm where she spent her childhood. Now the 32-year-old owns 10 planes and employs more than a dozen people, including pilots who come from all over the country, from Chesapeake, Virginia to Washington State, to tow banners for her company. These are the folks delivering messages straight to the beach. The happy anniversary greeting offers of free lobster tails, deals on sub sandwiches. In many ways, the local economy depends on Jenny's banner planes. Most of the pilots don't plan on towing banners forever. They're building flight hours that will help them land jobs as charter or airline pilots, where they'll trade in their single-engine prop planes for twin-engine jets and their cargo of nylon and rip-stop advertisements for passengers. Flying planes is expensive, and to become a first officer on an airplane, you need at minimum 1,500 hours of flight time. For those who aren't wealthy or trained by the military, the best way to build the requisite flying hours is through blue-collar aviation work, crop dusting, inspecting power lines, and towing banners. There's nothing new, of course. 8 years after the Wright brothers' historic flight in 1903, aviator Calebraith Perry Rogers flew another of the Wright brothers' planes, the Model EX, across the country in the first coast-to-coast flight. It was named the Vins Fizz Flyer after a grape drink whose owner sponsored the undertaking. On the bottom of the wings was written Vin Fizz, so that astounded onlookers could read it as Rogers soared overhead. A century of aerial aviation followed, or rather aerial advertising followed, and it is still going strong. The tow line, grapple, and banner come not long after the Vins Fizz Flyer, but it wasn't until the 1940s when the Piper Cub, the Model T of aircraft, was mass-produced that banner towing really took off. By the 1980s and 90s, back when my uncle David Tricky was towing banners in Myrtle Beach, aerial advertising was as familiar to sunbathers as highway billboards. And like the pilots of OBX Airlines, my uncle's co-workers came from all over, Maryland, Georgia, even Somalia. Some of them, like my uncle, were kids just out of college, but many were military veterans or retirees finally getting around to following their dreams of flight, while also supplementing their pensions. At the end of a long day in the sky, they would gather at beach bars to talk about the quality of wind and clouds, the sharks feeding by the pier, the sun igniting the ocean. While my uncle moved on to flying larger and larger planes, those single-engine days still hold a special allure. It was pure flying, he says. The OBX airplane's ground crew, led by Jesse, is out in the field, laying banners across the grass. Jesse is lanky, long-haired, and tan, and like his sister, he runs a tight ship. He waves his hand toward three banners. These are too close together, he says. If a crosswind picks up and one gets caught, the other, the pilot will have to drop them immediately or risk crashing. It's just science. Jesse understands the dangers involved because his sister experienced them firsthand. In 2015, a banner cable got stuck in the flight mechanism that controls up and down movements in Jenny's beloved Citabria, and she crashed into Croatan Sound. The plane was totaled, and she spent 16 days in the hospital recovering from facial and head injuries, broken bones, and lacerations. Pilots have died in similar crashes, but these kind of accidents are rare, or as Jesse says, it's like winning a lottery that you don't want to win. Jenny didn't stay out of the cockpit. Today, she's in another Citabria, a red one. Waves of heat ripple off the tarmac in front of her. Sunlight glints off the tail. The drone of her engine picks up. Then she's in the air, her natural habitat, and releases her tow hook. A yellow metal claw dragged in behind the plane on a length of rope and flies at full power over the lead rope of the banner, which is suspended by two sticks. As soon as the rope gets taut, she pitches the plane upward at an absurdly steep angle, peeling the banner off the ground like a giant Band-Aid. She climbs steadily, flying southeast toward the southern tip of Nag's Head, and her long, thin tail streaming behind. From a distance, it looks like an eel slipping through the sky, but the woods come into focus for the surfers and the sunbathers below. Miller's waterfront. The only thing we overlook is the water. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. We hope you enjoyed it. And be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. So long till next time.